wide range of topics in astrophysics. His studies on the possible relationships between cosmic rays intensities and the Earth's climate and the Milky Way's spiral arms and ice age epochs on Earth have been widely echoed in the scientific literature as well as in the general press. There's also more on Nir's biography in your booklet there. And with that being said, Nir Shaviv.
It's a great pleasure being here, and it's even an honor to be the first speaker to open the panel sessions. What I want to do is discuss one particular topic. What I want to do is to discuss one particular topic, and that's the role that the sun has in climate change. I hope that by the end of this 15 minutes, you'll be convinced that without understanding the role that the sun has in climate change, you cannot understand what has been happening over the 20th century. And you'll also understand why alarmists are doing their best to play down, to disregard, whatever you want to call it, the role that the sun has on climate. Okay, I'll discuss a few points. First, I'll begin by saying things. I'm fine. Okay, I'll say a few things about climate sensitivity and radiative forcing. And you need to understand both of them if you want to understand what has been going on in the 20th century. In particular, I'll show you that shouldn't be talking with my hands. If you want to understand, since it's only 15 minutes, I won't say any jokes about hands. If you want to understand the 20th century, you need to know exactly how much the radiative forcing was and what the climate sensitivity is, and if you introduce more radiative forcing with the sun, it means that you're going to change your perception of what the radiative forcing should be. I'll talk about the sun, evidence that it has a large effect on the climate, and I'll also show you that you can quantify it, and let me begin. Okay, radiative forcing. And climate sensitivity. If you change the energy budget of Earth, just a second. I cannot see the slide. Now I can see the slides, and I know what I want to say. If you change the energy budget of Earth by a given amount, you will cause it to heat or to cool. For example, if you double the amount of CO2, calculations show you that you change the energy budget by something like 3.8 watts per square meter. Now, you can plug it into global circulation models, whether you believe them or not, and then see how much the temperature will change. The change in the temperature is the response of the system, and if you look at the ratio between the change in the temperature and the change in the radiative forcing, you get the climate sensitivity here, this thing. Now, if you believe the IPCC, then this number translated to times the radiative forcing of the CO2 is a temperature increase of 1.5 to 4.5 degree increase if you double the amount of CO2. If you open the last IPCC report, you'll find that they increased it to 2 degrees without any real reason. Why? I don't know, but this is what they have done, probably because they want to frighten us. Okay, now, why is this ratio between temperature change and radiative forcing the most important number in understanding climate change? The reason is that if you want to understand what has been going on in the 20th century, to know how much of the temperature is because of a change in the, if you want to explain the change in the temperature, you need to multiply the change in the energy budget with the sensitivity. Of course, this is a very simplistic thing because First of all, it takes time for the system to react, so we have to take something on finer timescales. There are additional things which affect the temperature, such as the internal oscillations like the PDO. But roughly speaking, the change over the 20th century is going to be the forcing that, for example, we humans have been imposing on the climate times a sensitivity. Now, if you want to explain the given change in the energy budget, sorry, the given change in temperature with a given change in the energy budget, you need a high climate sensitivity in order to explain that, okay? However, if there is any additional radiative forcing which has been responsible to, or has been playing a role over the 20th century, it means that the total radiative forcing over the 20th century was larger. And therefore, in order to explain the given change in temperature over the 20th century, you need to multiply this larger number by a smaller climate sensitivity. Now, if the climate sensitivity is smaller, it means that the temperature increase over the 21st century is going to be smaller as well. Okay, so for this reason, it's very important to know whether there is any additional factor which has been responsible for changing the energy budget over the 20th century, and there is, and that is the sun. Okay, so the sun is a variable star. It changes its activity on different timescales, ranging from days to, or even hours, to millennia or longer. The largest variation is the 11-year solar cycle, over which the a polarity of the magnetic field switches, but on shorter and longer timescales, there are additional variations. For example, the 11-year solar cycle has a long-term secular modulation. Sometimes it's stronger and sometimes it's weaker. These changes in activity translate to small changes in the solar irradiance, but also to relatively large variations in things like the amount of UV, the strength of the solar wind, the strength of the magnetic field, and things like that. It turns out that all those things affect the climates, and in 15 minutes, it's totally impossible to show you the large range of evidence that proves that the sun has a large effect on climate. This is just one example. What you see here at the top is a reconstruction of the solar activity using carbon-14 from tree rings. At the bottom, you see a reconstruction of the climate, primarily of the Indian Ocean. That comes from oxygen-18 to oxygen-16 isotope ratios in stalagmites in a cave in Oman. And clearly, you see that there's a very nice correlation demonstrating that the sun is affecting the climate, in this case, of the Indian Ocean, but you have other such evidence demonstrating that sun affects the climate in the Northern Atlantic, in China, in Antarctica, in a lot of places. Namely, it's a global effect. Okay, where does this link come from? Well, it turns out it doesn't matter where this link comes from because there is this evidence that the sun affects the climate. But as a scientist, I'm interested, I'm curious to know where this link comes from. And the link comes from this following mechanism. It was realized already in 1959 that the atmospheric ionization changes by a change in solar activity. Basically, what happens is the following. When the sun changes its activity, it changes the strength of the solar wind. The solar wind blocks the flux of high-energy particles, which are called cosmic rays, from coming from the outside the solar system. Actually, they are coming from all around the galaxy from the death of massive stars in supernovae. Now, when the solar wind is stronger, it blocks some of this radiation coming to Earth. Actually, it degrades its energy. And therefore, when the solar wind is stronger, less of these particles reach the atmosphere, and we get less atmospheric ionization. It turns out that most of the atmospheric ionization outside is governed by the flux of these high-energy particles called cosmic rays. Here, it might be from radon gas from emanating from the concrete. Well, this is not concrete, but from the concrete. But outside, it's totally governed by the flux of cosmic rays. Now, it was suggested in the 70s and then demonstrated already in the 90s that the amount of ionization in the atmosphere changes the formation rate of what's called cloud condensation nuclei, which are the small particles upon which you condense water vapor when you form clouds. So the link is the following. When the sun is more active, you have a stronger solar wind, less atmospheric ionization, less cloud condensation nuclei, clouds which are less white because they have less particles, and therefore an increase in the temperature. Okay, you can see this effect operating here. You see in blue the change in the cloud cover, and you see in red the change in the cosmic ray flux. You see here a lab experiment, this one carried out at CERN, demonstrating that when you increase the flux, number of ions formed in a cloud chamber mimicking conditions you find over the oceans, you increase the formation of condensation nuclei. On very short timescales, you can see it operating in the atmosphere. You have things which are called Forbush decreases, when for a few days you get a decrease in the cosmic rays reaching the Earth. You see in four independent data sets, the left one is the aerosols, and three other ones from three different cloud data sets, you see that as there is a reduction in the number of ions because of reduced cosmic ray flux, you reduce the number of condensation nuclei, and you change different properties of cloud cover. Okay, you also see that on geological timescales, you can reconstruct the cosmic ray flux using meteorites and see that the flux has been varying with a periodicity of 145 million years, and that's because of our passages through the spiral arms of the Milky Way, and this synchronizes with changes in the temperature on Earth, which in this case you can see with a reconstruction based on fossils. Now, you can quantify this link. What happens is the following. When the sun is more active and you change the energy budget because of the cloud amplification, you change the amount of heat which goes into the oceans. And as Joe said in the previous presentation, the oceans have a very large heat capacity. So it tells you that when the sun is more active, you expect all this extra heat to be absorbed into the oceans. And on short timescales, the oceans, because of their large heat capacities, don't have time to react. So they store most of this energy. Now, what happened is that because they absorb all this heat, they expand thermally. So you should expect to see variations in the sea level synchronous with the solar activity. And this is exactly what you see here in this graph. You see here 80 years worth of tide gauge records showing you how the oceans expand and decrease every solar cycle. This can be used as a huge calorimeter to measure the energy budget associated with changes in the solar activity. And lo and behold, it is something like 6 to 7 times larger than what you would expect from changes in the solar irradiance. And it means that the role that the sun has been playing is much larger. Interestingly, it fits the change in the energy budget that you would expect from the change in in the cloud cover that you see synchronous with the cosmic rays. This graph by itself tells you that the sun is important, and the IPCC cannot ignore the sun anymore. They'll tell you, oh, we're taking the sun into account, but what they really mean is that they are taking the small changes in the irradiance into account. However, the sun has a large amplified effect, and you can see it here. You can model the 20th century using a diffusion model with several boxes. And what you can ask, what you can do, you can leave everything as a free parameter. Say you are unbiased, leave things like the climate sensitivity, the coupling between the lands and the ocean, the diffusion into the oceans. You can allow effects of internal oscillations, and ask the question: for what range of climate parameters do you explain the 20th century? And the answer is you can do that. And when you do that, you find a very good agreement. In fact, if you allow the sun to have a large effect on the climate, the agreement between the predicted or the model temperature and the observed temperature gives you a residual which is twice smaller than the residual you get with global circulation models. Why? Because they don't take the real effect of the sun into account. Okay, you can get then things like what is the expected contribution of the sun over the 20th century, and you find that it is roughly what you would expect from the ocean as a calorimeter. You can, when you do the fit, you can ask the question, what is Earth's climate sensitivity? And it is, in fact, something a little bit less than what the black body sensitivity is. For comparison, this is what the IPCC tells us it should be. And so let me just wrap up. There is an additional radiative forcing operating, and that is that of the sun. It means that the total forcing is much larger. It means that in order to explain the 20th century, the climate sensitivity is smaller. It means that with a lower climate sensitivity, the temperature increase over the 21st century is going to be smaller as well. You can make a prediction for what the temperature is going to increase if you use the same model. For comparison, these are the IPCC models. And with this, I'll end.